You're listening to episode 146 of the Pastor Writer Podcast, conversations on reading, writing, and the Christian life. I'm your host, Chase Ruplogle. If you're anything like me, I bet you are probably listening to more audiobooks than you were even just a few years ago. That's what the market tells us as well. Audiobooks have exploded, and for some authors make up nearly 50% of the books that they sell. It's not a conversation we've had on the podcast before, specifically about the rise of the audiobook market, but the more and more I'm listening to audiobooks and the more interesting things I'm seeing authors do with them, the more I've wanted to get somebody on who could talk about it. Corey Verner was the perfect guest. He's been around in the audiobook industry from the very beginning and is doing some really incredibly innovative things within the market today. I learned a ton from this conversation, had a ton of ideas from it. I think you will too. As always, thanks for listening. I'm joined on the podcast today by Corey Verner. Corey began in the audiobook industry in 2003 when the market was 90% cassette tapes. And in 2004, he founded Christian Audio, a niche audiobook publisher that focused on thoughtful Christian audio content. Christian Audio's first sale was a download on ChristianAudio.com, one of the initial few audiobook download sites. He and his wife, Chrissy, began an audiobook production company in 2005, Verity Audio Productions, which works with all of the major publishing houses, as well as niche Christian companies and ministries, and produces hundreds of titles a year through that name and One Audiobooks. One Audiobooks specializes in nonfiction inspirational content. They are disrupting the audiobook space with innovative solutions for publishers, for authors, and for ministries. And Corey, it's a real privilege and honor to get you on here. And I was going back before this interview and I pulled up my Christian Audio account and I downloaded my first book from Christian Audio in 2007, a Brennan Manning book. So I was pretty early with the Christian Audio downloads as well. Count me as one of those first fans. It's good to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. That's funny. That is a long time ago, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I actually have quite a few through there. So, well, part of the reason I've been looking forward to having you on the podcast is I'm a huge fan of audiobooks. You know, one of my commitments has been through this podcast, if I have a guest on, I've read the book that we're talking about, which, you know, on top of my own reading and then my pastoral work, there's a lot of reading going on. And there's just no way I could do that without audiobooks. There's not a month that goes by that I don't listen to at least one audiobook. And so it's been exciting to see the growth of audiobooks, but you're doing some really interesting stuff in the space with One Audiobooks I'm excited to talk about. But maybe a place to start, how did you get interested in the audiobook industry and particularly the Christian niche market within that?
Yeah, I actually was working at a tech company and I had a long commute. So I was driving from the time I was living in Vistin, I was driving to Orange County, which was about an hour and... you know, so 15 minutes each way. So I was on the road 2.5 hours a day. And I was listening to, actually the first week I listened to talk radio and I was like, I cannot do this. This is, I'm about to jump out the car. So I started getting books from the library on cassette. And this is probably late 90s. And so I was like a 50 book a year listener of audiobooks on cassette in the late 90s. And at the time, there were very few Christian books available. I was, you know, going to my tech job, listening to a lot of classics and things that were available I was interested in, but nothing in the Christian market, really. I had some A.W. Tozer cassettes that I had listened to 6 or 8 times. And at that point, I was really, my job was really stressing me out. It was just really, the position was, you know, in terms of the commute, I had really young kids. I wasn't seeing them that much. And I was like, this is not going to work out long term. So I really wanted to start a company. And the Christian audiobook space just seemed wide open. There were almost no books. And so that was how I originally, that was sort of the genesis for the whole thing.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I remember even, you know, when I was pretty young, my family was not a big reading family, but for whatever reason, we hit the library and got the audio books on cassette tapes and on vacations or long drives. we were listening to audiobooks. And so I remember when I found Christian Audio and some other places and realized I can down, you know, I've always been sort of interested in tech. And so I was pretty early to it and thought, this is amazing. I've got all these books that I can download instead of having to go find them through the library. I've always loved the audio format for similar reasons. For me, it's always been about I can be jogging, mowing, driving, and, yep. and still reading, if you will. What is it that you found yourself liking and resonating with the audio format specifically versus just, hey, I'm going to be a publisher, or hey, I'm going to work just in the publishing space?
Yeah, I mean, I find it hard to read. I am a reader and I do read a lot, but you know, usually reading is kind of the very first part of my day or last part of my day, and I don't get as much time as I'd like to do it. And so,
yeah, those also correspond to when I'm most tired.
Exactly. You're falling asleep,
which has an impact on it. Yeah.
Exactly. Trying to get through a book. And it, you know, and so really challenging books, you know, like, one of my favorite books of all time, The Brothers Karamazov, you know, I've recommended to a few people to read that. You know, my dad, I remember he came back to me one day and he's like, I finished it. You know, I told him a year before, it took him a year to read it. You know, you could listen to that. It's 40 hours, but yeah, like you said, you could do it over a month of your exercising or something. So I love the idea that you can engage some of these books that are really difficult, to read. A lot of people use it as a discovery, you know, a way to discover content. And then, you know, the books that they really want to dig into, they'll buy those books in print and read those. But, they use the audio just to kind of recapture that time that could be lost otherwise by, you know, doing two things at once.
Well, it's really interesting you say that, because I think that's counterintuitive, but it's the exact same way I find myself using audiobooks. The most difficult and challenging books I tend to buy in audio format. And sort of recognizing I'm not going to understand everything on every page. This is just exposure, and I'm going to grow through exposing myself to something deeper. A lot of philosophy books that I'm doing on audiobook versus reading. You've seen a lot of changes in the audio industry space. I mean, I think about you starting in 2004 with cassette tapes. You were cassette tapes, and then really rapidly CDs, and then really rapidly after that into the digital format. Everybody's talking about the fact that audiobook trends are up, that it's growing, that it's continuing to grow. What are some of the trends that stand out for you? I'd be interested, or generally, but maybe specifically in the Christian market, you have a real your eye on that in particular when it comes to audiobooks and audiobook consumption.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I've been going to the Audiobook Publishers Association conference for almost 20 years, well, pre-COVID. And a lot of times they do sales surveys and they talk about data, who's listening, what are the demographics, all of those types of things. And our market is very different than the general market. And a lot of times I would work and speak at those conferences, kind of educating people about our market. You know, one example is that the general market, 75% of the sales or something like that are fiction. And in our market, 75% of the sales are nonfiction. So fiction is a much weaker category in our market. In the general market, one of the strongest categories are, say, YA, fantasy, thrillers. Again, some of the weaker categories in the Christian publishing market for audio. So you have this kind of divergence between the two. The other interesting thing that's happening is that I see a lot of audio is a great way to get in touch with influencers and leaders. I run into a lot of people who are in Christian publishing or do podcasts or are, you know, influential pastors who are listening to more than 50 books a year. And I'm always surprised at people listening to multiple books a month and using that for the way that they discover content. So it's a really good way to get in touch with people. You will have less audio sales if you look at your sales in general, but you might have, in terms of engagement, more people listen than actually, more people will listen to the content that will actually read it, even though your sales will be much smaller. So for engagement, I think it's one of the best ways to get in touch with, you know, if you really want your family, for example, you know, hey, mom and dad, will you read my book? I mean, that is, they'll probably listen to it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to ask a couple questions about stuff you hear when it comes to those trends. You hear that that a majority of audiobook downloads are males, and particularly millennial males is driving that market, but that it is broadening. Is that true to what you're seeing?
No, it's not. Actually, the data shows us that it's if you look at audiobook demographics, everyone is listening. Actually, everyone over 22. So that the 18 to 20-ish market is not listening at all. But once you get into the basically over 20, 22, everyone's listening at the same level, meaning that if you took a pie chart and split it up, it would look like a pizza, evenly split up between all demographics. So older people are listening, Xers, millennials, boomers, everyone. The difference is that, and by the way, it's about 50%, almost exactly 50% male versus female as well. So when you look at usage, though, you will have much higher usage from the under 40 crowd. And slightly higher usage for men. So those are I call them super listeners, people that are listening to, 50 books a year, 6, 8, 10 books a month. And so you have that demographic really as heavy audio book listeners.
Yeah, but the broader point then is that yes, the market is covered. I mean, this technology is here. It's not something still coming. Do you see it continuing to grow? I mean, where are we in the adoption cycle? I mean, everybody, you're saying people are aware of audiobooks. We can check that off. They seem to know how to access audiobooks. But do we see the trajectory towards people buying more? Is it impacting how many of the print books they're buying? What is the future growth of the audiobook market look like?
Well, there are a couple of questions there. The first one is that, yeah, it's growing. It's projected to grow double digits and through 2028. It's been growing double digits since 2000 and, basically for the last 6 or 7 years. So it's really seeing a lot of growth, and that's projected to continue for some time. So that's a good thing. What was your second question? Sorry.
Well, Chase. I was curious how it impacts if we see people moving away from traditional print books or if it's a different thing. That's what, I wrestle with that personally. Am I buying less books? I don't think I am. I think I'm just buying the same amount of books and now buying more audiobooks.
Well, yeah, it's a very sticky format. So about 50% of people have listened to an audiobook. So that's quite a bit of that's in the US. So you have a lot of people who have listened to an audiobook. I think the more interesting thing was when they take those people, and about half of those had listened in the last 6 months, meaning that I think when people find the format, they stick with it. So I think the growth will continue, primarily because when I started, no one knew about audiobooks. I was trying to explain what the kind of company I was starting, and people really didn't understand it. I talked about downloads. No one had, there was no iPod. There were no downloads really to speak of, and our first sale was a download. So we were very early, maybe a decade early on a lot of this stuff, and there was just no awareness. And when we'd poll people and ask them, do you listen to audiobooks? They would always say, never thought of it. No, I don't listen. And it was just an awareness issue. So now we have pretty much a lot of awareness, right? If half the people in the country have listened to a book. But not only that, but then a lot of those people are now listening, have listened recently and are listening regularly. And I think as people find the format, they find out that they can read again, that they have time to read. A lot of millennials weren't readers, and now they're reading, quote unquote, reading a lot using audio. So I think the trends are set to grow, and there are some things that will accelerate it. Things like smart speakers. I mean, you can imagine weak categories in the Christian market have been children's, young adult, devotionals, things like that. I think those will be some of the strongest categories going forward because smart speakers, with AI, you have a morning routine devotion automatically programmed for you with the morning office and some scripture readings, your favorite podcast, maybe a Bible, an audio Bible reading, a devotional from and maybe some music from your favorite worship artist, right? So I think a lot of this content that before didn't work for audiobooks, now as people just say to their car, play my devotion this morning, or excuse me, or say to their smart speaker at home, play an audiobook for Johnny. These kind of things are going to only exacerbate the growth, and I think make more people find audio more convenient and easier to do, I think, than really fighting against all the other competing things. Like when I come home, I've got, you know, my computer, I've got my cell phone, you've got Netflix or, you know, all, you know, you have video games, you know, I mean, I personally don't play video games, but you have 50 things you can choose from to do. But if I go for a walk or something, probably an audiobook or a podcast is what I'm going to choose to do. But reading is competing with all of these other things in our lives that that we have.
Yeah, I've heard a writer say before that their biggest competitor is not other writers or other books, but Netflix and you're right, video games and just the busyness of where does it fit in. Mm-hmm. You have one of the things I've been excited about this conversation is you have when you talk about disrupting this audio space, I mean, even some of the examples you just shared, I think you're seeing further ahead than how some people are thinking of the current audio format. And when most people, I think about audiobooks, they're thinking Audible, like that's sort of in the same way books, right. Amazon. I know that it is, but maybe you could paint a picture of what the market looks like beyond just Audible, some of the things that are happening in the audiobook market beyond just, you know, I have an Audible subscription or I log into my Amazon account and down, you know, are given the options, hardback, softback, or audio.
Yeah. Well, one trend is libraries. So digital listening at libraries is growing exponentially. So a lot of people are listening to books through the library digitally. So that's a big trend. And you have other lots of big players kind of getting into the audio space, like Apple, which used to go through Audible, but now is doing it on its own and figuring out a strategy for that. So you have the iTunes Store, you have Google Play going after it, even Walmart and others. And some of those right now are powered by other services like Overdrive but there are a lot of things happening in terms of, you know, spreading out from Audible being the primary place that people go to listen. You have other places like audiobooks.com that are growing and, you know, you asked about us in terms of disruption. You know, One thing that we're trying to do is to help publishers and authors think about an environment that's a little bit more format agnostic. Instead of just thinking, you know, a lot of publishers, print publishers, think of themselves as a print publisher. I ran an audiobook publishing company for almost, you know, for 17 years called Christian Audio, and we were an audio publisher. So we think of ourselves in terms of format, whereas the where we should be thinking is in terms of transformation, like, how do we just get this content to people, whether it's an ebook or audiobook or both of those together or a bundling content? And so we're trying to help publishers and authors really think about that. Some of that is providing access to other formats. Maybe you don't give it to them, but we've actually have a SaaS app that we've built. We might talk about it a little bit later that helps authors and publishers to provide access to their audiobook. Maybe as part of a pre-order campaign, or maybe for review copy in exchange for an honest review, or maybe you just provide it because you're on a podcast like this, and you say, I'm going to let anyone who's listening to this podcast listen to my book for the next 30 days, or 90 days, or 60 days. So you allow you know, the biggest struggle in publishing is really discovery. And then once someone discovers the content, getting them to actually engage the content. So discovery and engagement are your really two big issues, along with all the other things we talked about, like all the competition for people's attention. So most of us here are trying to get an idea out there or trying to help people, right? We've struggled with something, so we're writing to help people think through how they can navigate this thing, right? And obviously we have the truth and right, the answer that people need. So we're excited to get this content out there. So why not look at providing the ability for someone to experience some or all of the content? Or why not have the audiobook be something unique where, you know, essentially, I guess you add content that doesn't exist anywhere else.
Yeah, this is what I think I'm hoping listeners are taking away. As a writer, I am very much in love with the idea of here is the book that I wrote. Here is the hardback with the dust jacket, you know, sent to me. I can see it. I can put it on a shelf. But then if I stop and think about myself as somebody who is consuming books, I'm doing it in more and more diverse ways. And that's what you're capitalizing on there. Really, this is, we have a message we're trying to communicate. And if we really want that message to get out there, then we should be thinking in more complex ways about how people are consuming that content. And audio is going to be a huge piece of that. I do want to get into specifically the work you're doing. We've been talking a lot about sort of general trends. If I understand correctly, at one point you sold Christian Audio and moved on and are now working primarily in two sort of names under Verity, which is producing, and then also One Audio, which is the sort of full service consulting service for publishers and authors. Maybe you could take a second to talk about how Verity came about and then also One Audio and how you define those distinctions between the two.
Sure. So Verity was actually a side business. So I was an audiobook publisher and we really didn't do any production. So Christian Audio, we published, you know, several hundred books a year, primarily thoughtful Christian books, all nonfiction. And that was our specialty. That's what we did for, you know, since we started in 2003. Verity was, it came about because I ended up producing for Crossway the ESV Bible in 2005, I think. And Christian Audio, they didn't want to give the rights up. So I ended up starting a company that produced that Bible. So that was our first project, which incidentally has become the most listened to Bible ever because of Crossway's kind of forward thinking in terms of how they provided it via apps. And they were one of the first ones to give it away free everywhere, the audio version. So that's been a very popular version, and it was kind of just a gift to us to be able to work on it. But that was the impetus for it. So then we began working with a lot of publishers, like we've produced for Random House and Hachette and HarperCollins, HarperCollins Christian. So we were more of like an industry kind of company that people would go to if you needed a book done in San Diego with an author, or because we had actually studios. I have five studios in San Diego. So people would come to us. And so it was basically just a production business that was known in the industry. We didn't advertise. And a couple of years ago, I started advertising, the production services that we had. And so we have a lot more, authors coming to us. We do a lot of, work with independent authors, self-published authors, still with large publishers. And, but really Verity is more focused on, production. One is a company that is focused on really strategic partnerships with Christian publishers, Christian ministries, and authors. And we are probably working with maybe 20 to 25 right now publishers. And we do a variety of things. It's sort of a la carte, meaning that you can choose any part of the service that we offer. But for many of these publishers, we're running their entire program. So we do consulting. We help them think about which books should be in audio. We do casting, help them think about, you know, who should read the book, production, which includes all of the recording, editing, mastering, file management, delivery to the distributor. And then we also do distribution. So we distribute for 15 or 20 entities right now. And that means taking your book and then putting it out everywhere where audiobooks are sold. And then lastly, we have some apps that are sort of helping authors and ministries and publishers think about how do we get our content out there. You know, the app can help you do list building to build a large email list, or direct selling to sell your audiobook directly to the customer and get better margins. The app can basically allow you to sort of do brand building. Like, let's just get this out to anybody that we can, because this is the name of our ministry and we want everyone to hear this book. We're less concerned about how we monetize it. We're more concerned about just getting the message out. So, you know, everyone has different goals for their book. We work with about 200 authors a year, through One and Verity. And I'm always interested talking to authors who say, I don't care if I sell a single copy of this book, because if I get this book into the right person's hands, this can happen. My screenplay gets purchased, or I get this large consulting gig, or or all of a sudden people will know about my story, which is really important to me. So it's not always about just capturing more revenue. A lot of times people have different reasons for writing the book and different, and they really need different ways to get it out there. Cause if you just put it up for sale and, you're competing against everyone, sometimes, it's very difficult to figure out a way to get people to discover your book.
Tons of interesting ideas in there too. One of the ones that you mentioned that I've been seeing a lot, maybe you could give some examples of some of the interesting things you're seeing your authors do with the audio format. But the way I originally found out about one specifically was Francis Chan was offering his new books coming out, and he was offering a pre-order deal where if you pre-ordered the book, so you know, you go to Amazon, you pre-order, you get a receipt. If you submit that receipt number, you get access to the audiobook format in advance of the print book format coming out, which for me, as somebody who is probably would have bought it on audiobook anyway, just seems like an obvious choice. So I did that. And I know part of what you guys are doing is innovating around the technology of how you deliver those kinds of products. You know, you're not just downloading a set of MP3 files at that point. You're making sure that those things are being tracked. As you're saying, you could use them for marketing purposes, for building an email list, other kinds of innovative things you're seeing. Because most of the people who are listening have probably thought about their audiobook format as one of those buttons on the Amazon page. You know, yeah. I'm going to buy either the ebook, the print, or the audio. But you're sort of painting this picture of using audio format to sell more books, maybe to help with that pre-launch, launch day sort of bump of sales, just innovative ways that audio can be used that maybe an author hasn't previously thought about.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I look at publishing, especially Christian publishing, the backlist is so important to the publishers. And that's because you have these evergreen titles that, you know, essentially everyone thinks of when you think of that topic. And if you get into that category where you're sort of the book that people recommend for that topic, you can grow sales over a decade every year, meaning you have more sales next year and more sales the year after that.
I had Gary Chapman on to talk about exactly. The five love languages, and he's saying it still every year sells more than it did the year before.
That's right. That's right. And there are a lot of books like that. You know, Dave Ramsey's books, and you know, I mean, I could offer a list of 15 or 20 books like that. So
yeah, Gary Chapman specifically said too, the first year, I think he said he sold 4,000 or 5,000 copies.
Exactly.
So this issue of discoverability you're describing, it's a really good example of it.
And that's why I mentioned brand building. You know, essentially what you want to do is you want to create awareness for the book over the first few years. And then once you do that, you know, you have derivative formats, you have, new versions of that book. And then of course, as people discover it, a lot of people are going to want to buy the print book. If it's a book, especially if it's a nonfiction book, people may hear it and then say, I do this a lot. I listen to the book and then I think I want to read that one as well. And so I buy probably every few books I listen to, I buy the print book and will try to read it. It'll at least be on my shelf.
Yeah, I do that a ton just because, you know, as a pastor or referring books, there's so many times where if I loved the audiobook, I want to be able to go look something up in it on my shelf without scrubbing through and trying to find something in an audio format. So I'll find myself doing that. Man, there's a few books I have the digital, the print, and the audiobook format of as well. Bought all of them. So. Let me ask this too. We're also talking about how audiobooks can be used as a marketing tool. So that's partly what you're describing here, that it's not just about driving sales. When it comes to maybe thinking about how an audiobook could be used for building an email list, how are you seeing authors doing that specifically?
So we actually, it's interesting. We did this very early on when audiobooks were less than 1% of the market. We had built a several hundred thousand person email list by a free book of the month. So Christian Audio had a free audiobook of the month since 2004, I think May of 2004. And every month, even up till now, they've been giving away a book. So we're doing the same thing. We have one has a free book of the month. So you can go there. And if you put your email in, you'll see every month we give away a free title. And we do a lot of partnering with publishers and authors like we did with David C. Cook on Francis Chan's book to do giveaways. And so ultimately what we're doing is using the audio to build a list. And that list, we can stay in touch with them. It's essentially a segmented list because we know what they've downloaded. So we can look and see what they've done in the past and then remarket them with similar titles. So these digital audiobooks and ebooks are a great way to do list building because essentially you're giving away the entire product in exchange for an email list. And the customer, of course, can unsubscribe if they don't want your content. But many people who get the book do want to stay on the list and stay in touch with you and hear from you. So I think it's one of the best ways to build a list. It's a way that I've used over the last 20 years to build very large segmented lists through the freemium model. And it also is interesting, you know, within the app, you actually at the end, you can set it so that when the offer expires, you can purchase the book at a discount. So we typically give a 50% discount. So if the audiobook is $19.95, then you can buy it for $9.95 at the end. So you can have permitted access to it as well. So then there are still opportunities to monetize it as your offers expire. So you get an email address, you get someone engaged in the content, possibly telling someone else, and then ultimately can sell the book at a high margin as well when you're said and done. So these are the kind of strategies that didn't exist primarily because our industry was so small. Probably 5 years ago, I was still telling people audiobooks were 1-3% of the market. And then all of a sudden some data came out and I started telling people it was 5-7%. And then the next year I was telling people it was 7-10%. And now I'm telling people it's 10-15-20%. It's hard to say. It depends on if you're looking at unit sales or revenue. So let's say, and if you're targeting millennials, you might have up to 50% of your unit sales in audio. So, you know, essentially we went from even me in the industry as an insider telling people that audio was just a tiny fraction of the market to now saying it's a much larger piece of the pie. Because I've always tried to be honest about where we're at. I don't want people to jump in, spend a bunch of money producing a book and find out that there's no market for it. So we were always like, hey, this is a pretty tough market. You know, it's very small. There's a handful of loyal people that are going to listen, but, you know, just kind of temper people's expectations. Whereas now I'm much more bullish. I think audio is one of the most important things you're going to do. If you're looking at building a list, and if you're looking at getting people to actually review your book and getting people to, you know, be, a raving fan of the content and the information you're providing.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's hard to imagine a book project that wouldn't include audio in some way. The other way I see innovation happening is, you know, I think about some of those early audiobooks I had, and they were it was as close to reading the book, but having somebody read it to you as possible. It almost like you could hear the page turning. Yeah. I mean, it was like we're trying to emulate you sitting. But today you listen to audiobooks, and more I'm hearing people sort of even innovating within the content itself, jumping out of the actual manuscript and commenting as they're reading, or even additional content that's in the audiobook that's not in the print book. What are ways you're seeing authors, publishers utilize the uniqueness of the digital medium, that it's no longer just print first and medium or digital medium second, but they're actually writing towards or innovating within the medium itself of audio?
Absolutely. No, this is really happening right now. And it's really exciting to me because I love seeing innovation in our industry. And the fact that people are, authors are adding content now, and that we have all of this bonus content being added, and that audiobooks are becoming kind of something unique from the print book. It is a different product already, but it's something that where you would want both in many cases. I'll give you a few examples. We had an author in last month, who brought her accordion, the book's Adulting for Jesus, and she's a comedian and accordion player. So she played her accordion kind of, throughout. So she has, some songs that she's written that are the transitions between the chapters. You know, when we recorded Francis Chan's book, we actually went to him because of COVID and, recorded at, a place, where he was living at the time. And, Just hearing his passion, I just don't think you could get that in the, by reading the book. I mean, you know, something like that, hearing the content, I think it makes a huge difference. We had another author who, actually is, blind and somehow recorded the book at her home, and she sang and added songs in between each of the titles. That also happened last month. So we're seeing authors who are, you know, providing commentary at the end of chapters. And so, yeah, a lot of this is happening. It's really exciting. I would say there were very few examples as late as last year of this happening. And now it feels like every other project, there's some talk about how do we make this product unique. So that's exciting. It does, you know, audiobooks aren't cheap to produce necessarily. But at the same time, and so this can be difficult to add a lot of this content. So you have to sort of temper yourself. But at the same time, if you're just talking about going off script or providing some commentary, that doesn't cost a lot and doesn't take a lot of extra planning. But you're typically as the author of the book going to have to plan that out and figure out what you want to do. The production company you use isn't really going to be able to provide a lot of support to help you develop that content. You have to develop that content. You have to sort of create a vision for what you want to do. But I think customers love it.
Are you seeing that more and more of the authors are actually reading their own audiobooks? Because that's the other big trend. I noticed in the beginning, it was always like a British sounding male voice, you know, reading these Christian books to us. And now more and more, which I love, I think everybody I talk to does as well too. When the audiobook experience is not just the content, but it's also a way of getting to know the author in a way that I think sometimes is hard to with just the print version.
Yeah. I would say 10 years ago, we were doing 3 author reads a year, and we were doing several hundred titles a year, Christian audio. I would say we're running 35% author reads, sometimes more. So Verity can even be higher because we have so many authors coming to us who want to read self-published authors. So yeah, we're talking about potentially, you know, in the coming years, half of audiobooks will be read by authors. Most important books now, you know, books that are kind of bestsellers are author read. If you look at Audible and you look at the best-selling Christian books, 80-90% of them will be author read. So that's been a trend with best-selling books, because there was always a budget there to do it, and people want the author, you know, because they're used to hearing the author's voice. But we're seeing that even first-time authors now are getting a shot to read their book and are choosing to do it, and the publishers are allowing it. So we're probably involved in several hundred author-read projects a year at this point.
Just out of curiosity, too, you know, a lot of the listeners are bloggers as well. Do you see or do you keep up with trends in audio, even outside of the book space? You know, one of the things I've done before is I'll oftentimes take blog posts that I've written on the Pastor Writer website, and I'll read them in like you would an audiobook and release them as episodes on the podcast. I like that personally, because there's sometimes I find a great article and, oh, if I can open that on my phone and listen on my drive, it's the same value proposition. Are you seeing just the audio format moving into spaces even beyond just the traditionally published book that authors should be aware of or be thinking about?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's a tough question. I mean, I talk to publishers about, you know, why not offer the audiobook as a podcast and then pull it down, you know, because you have a lot of people who listening is kind of contextual, right? Someone might only get their books from Audible. They might only get their books digitally from the library. They might only podcast. So the more kind of delivery sort of options that you offer people, the better, I think. The problem with podcasting is you really can't monetize it very well. It's difficult. There are people that are monetizing podcasts now, where you essentially go to their page, you log in, and then you can listen to it on the page. But it's a very inconvenient process, and most people aren't used to paying for a podcast and don't want to go through it. So that's one challenge with, say, using a podcast. But one thing we've seen a lot in the data for our industry, for the Audiobook Publishers Association, is that if people are listening to podcasts, they're also listening to audiobooks. If they're listening to audiobooks, they're also listening to podcasts. So podcasts it's a great way to market and promote your book and your audiobook specifically. So I think that's very exciting, because you're talking to an audience who, you know, who they are because of what they're listening to, and you know that they like audio. So that's a very, very good place to maybe spend a little bit of marketing money if you're going to, rather than, say, throwing, it's very difficult to really spend money wisely in marketing books, because you have a, what, $15 to $20 product, and it might cost you $15 to $20 to convert a customer. So it's a difficult proposition to figure out, how do I market this book?
Well, hopefully what we've done for listeners is say, if you are writing, you should be thinking about the audio format somehow, some way, because the people who are reading are oftentimes listening. I know it's true if you probably stop and think about yourself as well. And Corey, I just think the stuff you're doing, it's been so helpful for me to just try to push myself to think outside of the box, to see all the ways you're innovating, changing the industry when it comes to audio format as well. If you do think about a listener who may be writing, considering being an indie author, publishing themselves, so much of what we're talking about, you know, you've got a team of people, the publishing house has a team of people, you're all innovating on this, they're trying to pull off something themselves. What advice do you give to those indie authors, first-time authors who are writing and, okay, based on this conversation, I'm going to try to start thinking more about audio and what I should be doing with it. What might that look like for a self-published author?
I mean, to me, I love John Piper's model. You know, he's basically every book he's written, he's given away, you know, as an ebook free immediately as it releases. And, he's still one of the best-selling authors in the Christian market. And, he has probably the largest audience in the Christian market, one of the largest audiences, right, through Desiring God. And yet he's been really generous. Just he's the content, he believes it can help people think about how to desire and love God more. And so he wants to get it out there. So I think sometimes there's this sort of a little bit of a scarcity mindset. It's a little cliche. People have been saying this for a long time, but it's really true. You think, if I give this book away, I'm going to lose a sale over here. Or if I give them the audiobook, or they get the audiobook, they're not going to buy the print book or whatever. There's a stat that you're only ever reaching 20% of your potential audience. That's when you're basically been doing it for 10 years and you seem to be pretty well known. You've still only reached 20% of your potential audience. So when you're just starting, you've reached 0.000% of your potential audience, you know, and you're trying to sell something for $20 and you're pushing on that. It's pretty short-sighted. I think it's about figuring out if you think the content's important and helpful, you want as many people to engage that content and read it and basically see that change and see that transformation as possible. So that's a big thing, is to break out of that mindset of, you know, I spent a lot of money on this audiobook, I want to make sure that I recoup it. So you take the exclusive at Audible because you're going to get a little more percentage for 7 years. No, forgetting that Audible used to be, like a few years ago, was 95% of the digital market. Now it's less than 50%. So Audible sales are not growing as a percentage of the market. They're shrinking every year. And so I think just don't be short-sighted is really the big thing.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. And what I've heard come through over and over for you too is this you care about the message. If you're doing this to make money, you're probably in the wrong business. The book right. market is hard. Right. But if you really care about this message, I think there's so many of these, there's more and more interesting ways to connect people with that message. And I think you're pointing out, well, probably sell more books along the way because of it too. So the best thing that could happen is if everybody in the world read your book for free, because a lot more people will know about it and a lot more people will be interested in picking up the book. So,
well put,
Corey. Yeah. Well, man, this has been so helpful, so fascinating. What is the best way for people to be able to keep up with trends? Is it to follow you? Is it to follow one? What's just the best way? I know there's a lot here for people to think about, and this is, as we've described it, changing rapidly. There's more and more people innovating around audio. What's just a good way for writers to be able to keep up with what's happening and then also to keep up with you and the work you're doing?
Well, that's a great question. Right now I'm not really, I mean, I speak on podcasts here and there. I've been putting my head down for the last 2 years building this new company. But we're just coming to the point to where we've just made a few more hires, and I'm going to step back and try to maybe take do something like you're doing, help people talk about and think about audio in terms of how audio fits into, your marketing strategy. And so, that's something I hope to do soon. But if you want to get in touch with me specifically, you can just email me. It's my name, Cory@oneaudiobooks.com. That's one way to get in touch with me, or go to One Audiobooks to see what we're publishing. But right now we don't have a lot of, we're not really talking a lot about what we're doing in the industry, because a lot of what we're doing is, we're building it. It's in, we have this software app that's still in beta mode. It's going to come out of beta mode in May, and then we're going to really start talking about it a lot. We do have about 10 publishers using it, and we have a lot of things running through it, but we're still, iterating on it a lot. So if you want to keep up with the industry, I think podcasts are the best way to do it. If you're interested in Christian publishing, you know, listening to podcasts like yours, that's how I stay up with the industry, as I typically use podcasts. I think, you know, podcasts are kind of the new blogs, right? I mean, it's just, it's where when something happens within, I feel like within hours, it's being talked about.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I can't be more helpful with where to go for information. A lot of what the information we get every year, I look at our sales surveys that we do as an industry. I'm part of our association, our trade association. And so a lot of what I do, it's very empirical. Like, we look at what's happening in the industry and what the numbers look like and where the growth is, and try to adjust our, you know, businesses accordingly.
Yeah, well, what I'm hearing is it sounds like we're still very much at the beginning of this thing and everyone's figuring it out. And I'm excited to keep following you. And as you are putting more of those resources out there, maybe it is a podcast or something down the road, I'll make sure and share it with listeners, because I'll be listening and figuring it out as we go as well. Corey, real honor, privilege. Love the work you've been doing for a long time, and really excited about the things to come. So thanks for helping us think deeper about audiobooks.
Thanks, Chase. I really enjoyed it. Take care.
You've been listening to the Pastor Writer podcast. And as always, you can find show notes for today's episode by going to pastorwriter.com/146. There you'll find information about the interview, as well as ways that you can subscribe and sign up for email updates. If you haven't already, another great step you could take is joining the Pastor Writer Insider Group on Facebook. It's a private group for writers. We've been talking about writing tips, some craft topics, some live Facebook videos. It's a place you can feel free to introduce yourself, as well as share some of the writing that you've been working on. If you are interested in doing that, just go to pastorwriter.com/insider. It'll take you to the proper Facebook page for you to request access. I'd love to be able to meet you there. As always, thanks for listening. Until next time.